You are listening to a sermon by Al Rample, recorded on Sunday, June 21st, 2026, at Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
25 years ago, I was invited to attend a mission leaders conference in Montreal. At the time, by virtue of the bio that you've heard, I was still pastoring, and I was in a small country church in southern Manitoba. But I was invited because I was on the board of Mennonite Church Manitoba, and I guess they felt sorry for me and needed a trip to Montreal, so off I went. It was in this place, Montreal, that I met Jack Suderman. I think it was more or less the first time. For those of you that don't know the name Jack Suderman, he was the former General Secretary for Mennonite Church Canada. And he was the plenary speaker for that weekend. And he opened each one of those sessions with a short phrase. It's a phrase that I've spent the last 25 years trying to figure out how to apply it. It's a statement that's relatively straightforward, and it's not overly difficult to understand it. Actually, each one of the words is not more than three letters long. It should be self-evident, and yet it seems to be a struggle every day in life, in relationships, and in ministry. Are you curious what the statement is? Here it is. God is God, and we are not God. Did you need that to be said again? Some of you may have missed that. God is God, and we are not God. Embracing that simple, it's a very profound truth, shapes how congregations understand their calling, how we worship, how we serve, how we form community. Yet, as the saying goes, it's a lot easier to say something than it is to do something. So I confess to you that while I know this statement is true, and there are many people in my life that are quite willing to point it out that it's true, that God is God and you're not, Al, I struggle to understand the powerful forces that keep on trying to persuade me that it is otherwise. Consider our relationship with a little device that I have in my pocket. I should have put it on mute because it talks to me quite regularly. You maybe have one of these as well. I see a few out there. These are profound devices. Throughout any given day, they allow you to engage all kinds of things. Who you want to talk to, you don't even have to speak, right? You can find your way. I found my way to you today by virtue of this device. You can manage your finances. You can even close your garage door, change the heat in your home. All those things, all from the power of your palm. Isn't that amazing? Do you think it might be trying to tell us that we're more powerful than we are? It often confuses us. Am I really without that much influence? Maybe I can do things. And yet we find out that we have been diagnosed with an illness, and suddenly it becomes true that we don't hold everything in the palm of our hand. God is God, and we are not God. Even so, we try each day to try to find a way around that. So thank you for letting me wander a little bit with you. Wild hope for an unknown season. Are we in such a season? If you watch the news, you probably think so, yep. In the summer of 2014, Mennonite Church Canada had an assembly. And that assembly had a guest speaker. Her name was Betty Priest. Maybe some of you would remember that name as well. Betty is a friend of mine. We've worked together in many things in MCEC. And she spoke at that assembly. And she talked about the rapid cultural shifts that were affecting the church. And she titled her address, which I borrowed, Wild Hope for an Unknown Season. She's a friend. She gave me permission. She observed that even beyond the internal challenges that congregations face, a large issue confronts us, that our culture is changing quickly, and these changes are often leading people further away from the church than towards it, and that the rate of that change is rapid. That was in 2014. I would say that situation hasn't changed drastically, but we've responded to it differently over the last 12 years. Some denominations are experiencing steep decline, what could even be called freefall. Others are doing somewhat better, but none of us are unaffected. Every congregation, whether we're aware of it or not, is touched by the shifts of our culture around us. So we have to ask, and we do ask, can the church remain relevant in all of these shifts? Is what we do together meaningful in this context? Is there hope? And at times the answers are discouraging, and then you have a Sunday morning like today, and you change your mind. Thank you, young parents. You're making my day. Betty Priest offers us an insight in this person in looking at the whole scene. She said, as Mennonites, when we get into these times of challenge, we often go back to our Anabaptist roots. In this uncertain time, what can we learn from our Anabaptist roots? And then we go back to the 16th century and the Reformation, and we look at Menno Simons and Markham and others of that era and say, so what can we learn about our forefathers in that space? And she said, well, maybe we should look at the Catholic Church because we're more like the Catholic Church now than we are the reformers of the 16th century. We're the ones in the established churches. We're no longer the radical reformers. We are, in so many ways, the established church, which people are finding their way away from in many cases. So, if we look at the Catholic Church in the Reformation, what can we learn? The Catholic Church had three historical responses to the threat that the reformers posed to them. They could fight back, and they did. In some ways, they gave up. And in other ways, they rediscovered an identity in God during this era. Some chose resistance, others pursued deep spiritual renewal. And so, this is the era in which figures like Teresa of Avila, John of the Cross, Ignatius of Loyola experienced profound transformation in God's presence and invited others into lives marked by humility, courage, love, and grace. Many chose the option, the third option of renewal, is where hope lies in our new and renewing relationship with a holy God. Let's go to the storm. Mark 4, 35 to 41. The disciples are in a boat and it's getting tossed hither and fro. It's tough. The waves are splashing over the sides. How Jesus manages to sleep through that, I don't know. And in that space, the disciples cry out in fear. They say, Teacher, don't you care if we drown? The question sort of sounds like, well, it sort of sounds like me sometimes when I say, Are we viable? Where will leadership come from? Does God care that we might fade away? These are all significant and they are real fears. The challenges are there. Many of us have prayed prayers like this. And Jesus has an interesting response. Not only does he calm the storm, many of us would love it if he would calm the storm a little quicker here, but he asks the question, Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? These are not words necessarily of condemnation, but they are an invitation to trust. We still are faced with the same three questions. Will we fight? Will we give up? Or will we rediscover who we are as God's children? The psalmist captures this invitation beautifully in the line that I'm sure all of you know, "Be still and know that I am God." So, most occasions, folks say, "Well, okay, that's great. That sort of sits in my mind." And I say, "But how do we do that? How do you be still and know that God is God and I'm not?" Now you understand why it takes me 25 years and I'm still not that far along the road, right? How do we do this practically? Some friends of mine, we have been working at this for some time to think through how we work with congregations and in our own lives as to how do we understand what God is doing. And we found a book by the name, by a guy whose name is Otto Scharmer. He wrote it for business, and it dabbles in Buddhism and a few other things, which plus or minus, I'm not sure how you might see that, but we've adapted it with a Christian theology. And it invites us to do three things. One of them is to surrender, a second is to abide, and the third is to allow something to incarnate. The first step is the hardest, and that is to surrender. It means letting go. And in most cases, it means letting go of control. That I'm not in charge, that God is. It means that you're looking at something else. Some of you will remember an old theological term, Gelassenheit. Does that resonate with anyone? It's a rough translation is yieldedness. But it means more than just simply yielding. It means letting go of your capacity to determine. So you're yielding yourself to the lordship of a holy God. And the reason we need to yield is so that we can get into this space of abiding. Because God has a hard time being heard when we're holding on so tight. I suspect all of you are different than me, but in crisis, I really hang on tight. Don't you? Maybe you do. I want to control it. I want to know what's going to happen. Please tell me exactly what's going to happen next. And yet, that's the very thing that you often can't see. So, to surrender allows us to abide, where we say, okay, God, you actually need to tell me what I need to hear. It's a space where we then can actually hear what God has in mind. And it's difficult with lives that are full, with anxiety that's usually running pretty high, for us actually to hear what God has in mind. We're used to doing, not waiting. We're used to being in charge, not being a person who is responsive to what God is up to. That was for me, not for you. I'm used to being in charge. I have staff. I ask them to do things, right? And so often I need to just be quiet and let God do God's thing. And in that stillness, a new voice can be heard. That voice has been speaking all along. It's God. Out of our surrendering, as we abide and listen, new things begin to come to life that we hadn't anticipated as we discern. And this is how we begin to incarnate what God is already doing, to align with the activity that God has already been doing and has been doing for many years previously. So often, I would like it to be a little different. I would like to do something, and then I'd like God to bless what I'm doing and come alongside me. I'm sorry, that's me. I know that's you're different and you've got that all sorted, but I sort of often get it turned around. And this is how God wants to work with us, that God already has an idea. God has already been in most situations that we enter in, actually all of them. And our task is to find God in that context, even when it isn't a pleasant one. And out of these things, amazing things can happen. Storms, crises are both very disturbing, and yet they are profound opportunities because they teach us one thing, at least, that we're not in charge. So I'm part of this nationwide church thing. They hired me back. I went back kicking and screaming 3 years ago. Not sure why. Well, I am. Doug asked, and he's hard to say no to. Have you met Doug Clawson, my colleague? He's very hard to say no to. Try as you might. So here we are, and it's an exciting time because we are in crisis as a church across Canada. We are not growing at a pace that I would like to see, but we're not done. In 2025, we had a gathering in Kitchener-Waterloo. Maybe some of you were there. It was a profound experience. We had all these table groups that were working on questions. We were asking them to discern what God had in mind for us. I had the small task of attempting to give a glimpse of what was being said in those tables after each of those groups met. And so we got stacks of paper, and here I am trying to read the highlighted portions to begin to get a sense of what people were saying. After the fact, we had 620 pages of discernment that we were asked to glean. We got it all typewritten out, read every page, and we were muscling our way through what the people of the church were hearing from the Spirit of God, who is already moving amongst us. And out of that came four key initiatives. Are you curious what you folks have been saying? You may not have seen it yet. Number one, the strongest thing that people were saying about us at this time, who we needed to be, centered on Jesus through theological renewal. Remember what Betty was saying about the opportunities in crisis, one of them being what? Renewal. That's what we're starting to say to ourselves, aren't we? A renewal movement. A second was becoming a vibrant multicultural church. A third key initiative was to discover, call, and equip leaders for the church. And finally, to embody peace as a witness and as a bridge. And so these four key initiatives are driving the work that we are doing together. It's an exciting time. We have nine actionable items that include youth ministry, ministry of young adults, internships, a Peace Church committee, training, leadership training for underrepresented groups, congregational renewal, intercultural church steering committee, worship resources, and a TRC call to action number 60 that we're trying to put into action. It's an exciting time. We're going to spend $200,000 more than we receive on an annual basis for the next 3 years to put this into play because we can't keep doing what we've been doing and expect different results. There's a definition of insanity that goes something like that, right? Yeah. We are not going to do what we've always done. We're going to do something that's new. We're going to embrace the challenge, and we're inviting you to embrace it with us. So thank you for inviting me here. Is this wild hope? Is this craziness? It could be. But I don't think I mind that much if we're doing this with a holy God. Right, what's that line again? Maybe you can help me. God is God, and we are not God. Okay, we got that together. Maybe you'll have less of a challenge in understanding and applying that in your life. Thank you for having me. Appreciate being here.